highlights, and then we'll open the floor for questions. Over to you, AJ.
Thank you, Africa. Thanks very much for making the time to be in this briefing. The issues we just want to touch on are the ones that are contained in the media release, which to a large extent covers the analysis of the audit outcomes for the reporting year 2008-2009. And essentially, in terms of that analysis, we've highlighted the fact that there is an encouraging trend in terms of the state of submission of financial statements for auditing and the timeliness with which those audits get finished. I mean, of the 500 plus entities that we've had to audit, there's only less than 30 that were not able to complete their audits as we speak today. And of those less than 30, most of them are public entities. If you look at government departments, not a single government department is still having outstanding audits as we speak. There's only one legislature that is still outstanding, but even that one, we should finalize that audit in a matter of days. So it's a good trend in terms of the discipline of accountability and the ability to report timeously on issues of finances and issues of the use of those budgets that are allocated by the legislature. The other area of importance in that analysis is the fact that there are very few departments that are sitting in the disclaimer and adverse opinion areas. Throughout the country, both provincially and nationally, it's only in provinces where we have got 6 departments that are sitting in that area, 4 disclaimers and then 2 adverse opinions. But at the national level, none of the departments have got disclaimers or adverse opinions. The bulk of the departments have got unqualified financial statements. In those unqualified financial statements, we have raised, nevertheless, some matters that need to be attended to that pertain to the effectiveness of internal controls. But what is pleasing is the fact that at least the financial statements that are contained in the annual reports can be deemed to be credible, can be deemed to be reliable, and therefore a true reflection of the state of affairs when it comes to the monies that were allocated by Parliament. There are a few departments that still have qualifications, but the vast majority are those with unqualified financial statements. So overall, it is a trend that is living up to I would say confidence in terms of at least saying the financial statements are reliable, because only about 43 departments out of about 150 nationally and provincially that still remain to be qualified. So with this picture, even though it is looking at this promising, we have highlighted what needs to be done, which does border on the side of being negative, that the vast majority of these departments that are sitting with the unqualified financial statements have not been able for at least the last 5 years to move into an area that we would like most departments to move into, that is of clean audits. And by clean audits, we mean that financial statements are reliable and the conditions under which they are prepared are equally credible in terms of the control environment. There are still very few departments that are sitting in an area that is described as clean audit. Nationally, from 2004-2005, where we made this analysis, where we had only about four departments sitting there, two national and two provincially. That number has moved into a very low improvement, and I think it's seven. Five national departments as well as two provincial departments, something in that order. But all we're emphasizing is that it's not an impressive movement after 5 years in terms of departments that ought to be sitting in that slot. And it's for that reason that we then put emphasis in this year's reporting about the need to step up the game in terms of moving most of the departments into an area where they can have clean audits. And we have identified those areas where action needs to be taken. One is the area where there are material changes that get made in the financial statements at the time of audit. Secondly, it's areas where there is a high prevalence of non-compliance with legislation, predominantly the PFMA. And thirdly, it's an area where we're looking at the information systems security and credibility of information emerging therefrom being suspect in terms of its reliability. And hence, these material changes that have got to take place at the time of audit. And lastly, we have a specific review of the human resources area. And here there are quite a few areas that we have identified that require attention. And in all these areas, on average, about 80% of all national and provincial government departments have got issues that need to be addressed in these four critical areas. And to deal with these issues, we have identified the same practices and behaviors that we've been talking about over the last 3 years. One being the need to improve the discipline and habits relating to financial management. It will be highly possible and in fact important that we begin to get the financial units within government to start dealing with financial matters on a more regular basis, on a more frequent basis, so that it does not have to be a matter that is dealt with at the end of each year, because it's through that some of the opportunities to correct some of these errors get missed. So therefore, we are proposing a monthly discipline when it comes to financial information and financial statements, so that departments can have an opportunity to prepare this information, have an opportunity to identify where the difficulties are, where the resource requirements are, way before the end of the year, so that then those resources can be provided and the accuracy of accounts can be better guaranteed come the end of the year and auditing. This is also critically important because it therefore means that the usefulness of this information throughout the year also gets improved, so that decisions that get made on this financial information are made on the basis of reliable information, which is not to the extent of 80% departments get adjusted at the time of auditing. The second area that we have identified, which is no surprise, relates to the role of the governance structures, audit committees, internal auditors, in preventing the incidents that will give rise to non-compliance to legislation, which was set and determined and promulgated for specific purposes, particularly the finance management legislation. And therefore, it's important that those issues get reviewed on a regular basis and any deviation thereto is not discovered at the time of auditing. Similarly to information systems, because, I mean, that's the hub of all government information, and therefore the credibility, security, and integrity of that information is is critically important for it to be managed. Human resources also is an area of high importance, and therefore controls relating to that, as we have identified, would be important for them to be taken care of. And all these issues, we do believe that internal auditors and audit committees, if they pay their attention to these issues and bring the shortcomings to the attention of the executive authorities, those should be acted upon. And it is in this respect that we do then make suggestions that perhaps the streamlining of the role of the audit committees, internal auditors, and their accountability arrangement with executive authority be looked at, so that there's no omission of their relationship to the to that highest level of responsibility within government. So at the moment you find that, yes, they are there, they do exist, they do report, but seldom do that information get to the attention of the executive authority. And perhaps their reporting responsibility and format ought to be ideal and refined to suit the requirements of the executive authority. So there's a lot that can be done to make improvements in this respect. Because then that will lend itself to the third important area, which is then facilitating a more effective leadership based on more informed and useful and simplistic information. So that action can then be taken based on something that is useful, that is credible, and that is workable and actionable. And it is through those, a combination rather of those suggestions that we believe we can move a step further from talking about and preaching about this information to rather practicing the implementation of these practices now. Because the impact thereof, we have tried to demonstrate in this reporting cycle, and perhaps in the next cycle, not only will we be looking at the impact of these shortcomings in leadership effectiveness, but we'll also be looking at the consequences of these impacts and risks not being attended to. So we may now be talking about the level of prevalence, for instance, of material misstatements. We may be talking about the level of prevalence of non-compliance with legislation. We have not been able to, at this stage, to say what has occurred as a result of these non-compliance, what has occurred as a result of these errors that we pick up in the financial statements. So these are the issues that would be critically important for the leadership to begin to look at, so that when the accounting unit report, when the governance structures report, they convince the leadership that the risk of anything occurring along the lines of fraud, along the lines of misappropriation, along the lines of service delivery compromises unlikely to materialize. So in a nutshell, that's been the emphasis of the reporting positioning for this time, around 2008-2009. The other areas which I may just touch on quickly relate to the performance information, which essentially is reporting about service delivery information that is contained in the annual report. In this area, we have identified that quite a number of departments, national and provincially, to the extent of about 40%, have got a situation where they still struggle with managing this information in a credible manner. And there are three areas where there are still these shortcomings. One is the ability to demonstrate that what they report on in the annual reports is reliable, because it, in most instances, at least to the extent of 40%, is not supported by credible information, credible evidence, and credible supporting information. The second area is relating to the meaningfulness or usefulness of this information. When you look at the link between the mandate of the department, the responsibility for the department, the strategic plans for these departments, what is put in place in their objectives, and what actually gets executed, there is very little link terms of all those areas of responsibility. And therefore, it renders the usefulness and meaningfulness of that information difficult to establish. And to the extent of 40%, it's quite a high number to be prevalent and yield some confidence to the public. The third area relates to the regularity responsibilities for monitoring, planning, evaluation of the service delivery results. In many of these departments, up to the extent of 40% and slightly more, there is a situation where there's no clear evidence of effective management and monitoring and planning of how these monies get put into use by each of the departments. And it's in that respect, therefore, that we have just highlighted that is another warning signal that requires attention. We will be working both on the financial side as well as on the service delivery reporting side with the relevant departments like Treasury, maybe Public Service Administration, to streamline the necessary interventions, because we do have this information in our management report, but it does need to be lifted to the level of strategic interventions so that the intervention by the leadership along the lines that are cited of strengthening information from finances, strengthening information from governance structures, and strengthening the leadership responsibilities and monitoring is brought to a much more sharper focus. So that's, in essence, what we have put as part of our reporting summary this time around. The details will be contained, once again, in the general report, which is in the process of being finalized. But we are at a stage where, without talking about specifics about which departments we're talking about, but at least we know the trends that are applicable and to what proportion across government. Thank you very much.
Thanks, AJ. We'll take your questions. Yanyana, Sinu, Chantel, and Linda.
AJ, Yanyana Bar from Rapport Newspaper. Firstly, I'm astounded by the fact that you just did that whole briefing off the cuff. That's remarkable, and that emboldens me to go back to the points that were made by the members of Parliament, where Mr. Ngesi and Mr. Tsunori both said, "Wow, you know, seeing that you are putting so much emphasis on the practicability of information, whether it not would not be interesting to actually know which departments have which problems." You then said it would be interesting to do so, but you're a bit worried that you haven't spoken to the provinces yet. So perhaps in a positive manner, could you not enlighten us at least on the five national departments which have completely unqualified audits, and perhaps just on one other one, the legislature which receded from a financially unqualified audit in 2004-2005, and which obviously does not have one now.
I think let me respond to that outright, and to highlight that the purpose of this briefing is not to name any department in any way, but to highlight the issues that are prevalent within the government system and which issues need to be dealt with and attended to by government and the leadership there too. There will come a time, because we are saying we're still going around the provinces with these roadshows. I think it would be very unfair for the provinces to hear about their names bandied around in the national presentation. And surely these reports have been tabled in Parliament, so to a large extent it is known which department has performed how. All we're seeking to do here today is to give a broad analysis of what are the common trends that need attention in all these annual reports, so that they're not looked at in isolation, but they're looked at within what is the most critical to be attended to.
As a follow-up, if I may, that's exactly why I asked on the five national departments, and these are five positive national departments, and the other is a historical fact. Now, the problem, and this was raised almost existentially by some of these members of parliament who seemed pretty downtrodden, that, you know, it might be true that you have access to X number of an overview sort of view, you know, where you know the 32 departments have done this and that, the national ones. But quite frankly, given that these reports are given one by one, the point that was made by many of those portfolio committee chairs, and which I personally can certainly sympathize with, is that actually, no, we can't do it in that way because the mountain of paper is just too much. Now, given the point that you made about practicability, that if we need to move forward, we need to know what's wrong, would it not enlighten us hugely if you gave us the information on the five national departments, which you don't have to embarrass any province by doing, and the historical fact of 2004, which recently, I don't know whether any of my colleagues know it, but it would be interesting to us to know.
I think this debate was held in the House and it was closed, and I wouldn't want to reopen it in the media briefing. And perhaps if you can just avoid asking the specifics, because I am not going to provide specifics on any department. This briefing, both in Parliament and here, is about issues that need to be dealt with. It's not about naming who. It's about what should be done. I think it's important that at least respect that courtesy, so that at least we know what are the issues that will take our country forward, regardless of who is affected by them.
Hi, Chantal from Eyewitness News. Just from what you've highlighted, can the inference be drawn that some of the finance officers in the departments are incompetent, or that there aren't really skilled people, you know, in these roles in departments?
Indeed, from the analysis we've done, it is an indication that skills, to a large extent, is an issue. There are departments that have had to rely on consultants to be able to complete their financial reporting responsibilities, which I suppose was a good thing, at least to make sure that the work gets done. How to deal with the skills issue is a matter that is also raised as part of the human resource findings as well, where especially at the senior management level, there's a high level of vacancies and a high level of people acting. So there could be another link that is associated with that as well. But to a large extent, we do take comfort of the fact that at least when the errors were pointed out, there was someone in there to make a correction of those errors and at least make sure that the results are credible, even though the underlying environment under which they were prepared still needs a lot of intervention to be sustainable.
Mr. Auditor General, Linda Ensor, Business Day. You started off talking about the timeliness of reports, and that was promising, and then you went on to the lack of progress. Now, it seems that the members of Parliament, the impression that they were left with was the lack of progress. I mean, there was Mr. Godey and several people mentioned that, what are we doing, because no improvement. If you had to compare the timeliness with the lack of progress, what do you think is more critical? I mean, in the greater scheme of things, were you just being diplomatic to start off with a positive one, or the...
They are both important, because without timely reporting, then we don't have information on what is going on. And that is why we cannot disregard the action and the behavior and the performance of departments to submit information for auditing on time and for the audit to happen timeously and for errors when they're picked up to be rectified. That is fundamentally important. Otherwise, we'd be sitting with a situation where information contained in the annual report is meaningless. What we are also highlighting in addition to that is now the environment under which that information is created. We equally cannot ignore and neglect how important it is to have a more sustainable and continuously sustainable environment that continues to prepare information that is reliable throughout the year, because decisions in government get made throughout the year continuously. and therefore we run the risk, therefore, of making decisions that may be undermining some of the intent by the leadership in government. So that's why we are reflecting on those issues in that kind of comprehensive and balanced manner.
Wendell from Reuters. I just wanted to, you indicated that the analysis was essentially on prevalence and not so much on consequences and risks, but I would appreciate it if you could just give me an indication what are the indications there on the consequences and the risks of having these sort of qualified reports. Also, the trends, I mean, given the fact that there's essentially the executive bureaucracy has increased quite fundamentally, do you see that the trend actually going downward or getting worse?
Yes, indeed. The prevalence is important for us to be able to identify the risk. And having identified the trends, we have touched in our reporting and analysis on where the risks reside. And those risks rest in the, if you look, for instance, at material changes that get made, is the risk that decisions will be made on information that is not reliable throughout the year, which in some instances, as you may have heard in other occasions, where budgets get significantly overrun, which may result in irregular expenditure. Sometimes the cash dries out and there has not been an ability to identify and see that risk happening. So those are some of the risks that give rise to some of the information that is not produced reliably throughout the year. In some instances, if you look at non-compliance and information systems and many other risks that we've highlighted, the rather prevalent that we've highlighted, the risk relates to sometimes the risk of malpractices, fraud, error, and even more importantly, the erosion of the service delivery promises. But we obviously have not been able to quantify those because they're simply risks. When we get to the point where we can measure the occurrence of those risks and the prevalence of and materialization of those risks, then it becomes another story. But I think it's important that we are aware of the warning signals, so that we can act on them to avoid anything from going wrong. We have not in any way, that was not the nature and focus of the audit, to then confirm the happening or otherwise of those risks. Yeah, with regard to whether this situation is likely to get worse or better, we are hoping that it will not get worse because the one reason we put emphasis on these issues in this briefing in Parliament is to make sure that things don't get worse. That's why we're putting these warning signals so clearly. To make sure that things don't get worse is for us not to be bystanders, but for us as the audit office also to be participative and active in engaging the leadership on the ongoing prevalence of these warning signals, because it doesn't help for us to only report about them only at the end of the year, and throughout the year we're silent about them. And therefore our leadership visibility interventions are meant to do just that, so that no one can say we did not know about them. It may not have been experienced up to now because, yes, it has not been a culture within the office, but we have introduced that as a culture within the office to be active in raising these issues early on so that we can make sure that things get better, they don't get worse. So I can be more than optimistic that they won't get worse if we're all active and we all practice what we preach, including the leadership on the oversight as well as the leadership on the executive side.
Auditor General, Kaifas Khosana from Independent Newspapers. Just two things. You raised the issue of capital assets in your analysis, as having contributed immensely to many of the qualified audits, especially movable assets. Do you get an indication from government departments as to what is happening with the movable assets? Are they being lost? What is happening with government assets? And then secondly, in terms of the disclaimers and the other ones, and even the qualified audits, how much is the issue of fraud and theft of government money contributing to these audits?
Perhaps it's important to point up front that the issue of assets is confined to those departments that have got qualifications, and it's on about 43 of them. The rest, which in excess of 100, did not have qualifications on assets. So in that respect, all I can say is that for those departments that still have qualifications on assets, we have split the challenge into two parts. We can almost be assured that immovable assets, that is property, land, constitute probably the bulk of the challenge. When it comes to movable assets like office chairs, I mean equipment, vehicles, fleet, those are issues that are not necessarily complex to manage. And with the right discipline at the level of accountability, starting from the accounting officer, and the executive authority, ministers and MSCs take an interest for those remaining departments, we should be able to arrest that problem. The more difficult challenge to deal with will be the one on property and land, because it's a lot more complex. It requires a higher level of coordination. If we cannot account for them properly, it means we don't even know what we have, what we own, where it is, in what condition is it, and what maintenance requirements are required for those assets. So the challenge is to first get an initiative that will at least do the first level intervention that will look at the existence and the whereabouts of those assets so that we can then be able to confirm whether we're losing assets or we're gaining those assets. And that is why in our recommendation we have cited the elevation of this responsibility to a ministerial cluster level, so that at least the level of accountability and ownership is not left to the officials alone, but there is regular accountability at that level as well. The only reason that this happened is because there hasn't been any evidence up to now of regular monitoring at that ministerial level to deal with this issue. But we'll wait for this to take off so that we can be able to respond to the state of ownership of those assets, how many have been lost, how many are likely to be lost. But at the moment, we don't know. That's why we've got qualifications, because the accounting thereof is such that we cannot make head or tail on this particular matter. Now, with regard to, I think your question was around cash loss. If you can just repeat that.
Cash loss, that, you know, in terms of those that had, you know, adverse audits and stuff like that, you know, what is how much is the issue of, or what do you think, how do you think the issue of fraud and, you know, theft of money contributes, does it contribute in any way?
Yes, a very important question indeed. Fortunately, in the government, national departments, there's no department that has got a disclaimer or an adverse opinion, which is one element that we can say is elevating the level of confidence that at least accountability is at an appropriate level, barring the internal control environment that we said needs serious attention. In provincial levels, it's only in six departments that we have got adverse opinions with two and disclaimers with four departments. So even there, with the more than 100 provincial departments, the situation is not as alarming to warrant those concerns. And therefore, that problem, that risk, is only confined to only a handful of departments and agree with you, where we cannot account for anything, the risk of the loss of assets, whether it's cash or otherwise, is magnified. The risk of corruption, the risk of fraud, the risk of service delivery suffering just gets more and more enlarged. So we can, I suppose, take comfort on the fact that it's not many departments that are affected by that situation. But nevertheless, those other matters that we're raising alarm bells on still do pose that risk, although to a reduced extent, because at least to a large extent, there's some measure of reliable accountability. But it's just the control environment that needs to be beefed up.
Hi, Jim. My name is Peter Dutoy from Build Newspaper. Two issues. With regards to leadership, you mentioned it quite a few times. What are the conclusions that you draw from this report with regards to leadership? How strong is the leadership being given to departments, and what are the shortcomings there? And secondly, oversight. Oversight bodies, are they exercising their oversight roles adequately enough? For example, Parliament, portfolio committees, etc. Would you like to see oversight bodies claiming their oversight role stronger than they have in the past? Thanks.
We are looking at leadership and concluding on this in a rather comprehensive manner. That says, let's first identify what it is that leadership needs to take responsibility for. And those matters, to a large extent, are clearly defined in the PFMA. But we have gone to the extent of simplifying and identifying where the critical areas of focus should be. And that's why we said, if we can fix the discipline and the habits around accounting and finances and get those to cease from being an annual concentration point, but to get them to be daily rituals, monthly rituals, because in terms of accountancy, you've got to balance the books every month end. You've got to reconcile, you've got to balance, you've got to close the books, you've got to make sure that everything is intact. And daily also, there are daily activities that warrant that before you close the day's activities, you must balance certain things, because if you don't balance them, you're going to lose track of the trend in terms of the control of those important assets, whether it's cash, whether it's stock or inventory. So we need to bring back those simple disciplines and confirm that the leadership, up to the level of the accounting officer and even to the executive authority, have got the comfort that those disciplines are entrenched as part of the disciplines within the department. And therefore, the oversight also should be assured that those issues are being taken seriously. So it's being put at that basic and simplistic level, which we believe will nevertheless be effective if it is known whether or not these disciplines are adhered to. And on our side also, in terms of our own interventions, we will seek to confirm not necessarily the details of whether people or departments are complying with the detailed transactional activities, but the extent to which these basic habits that will assure proper governance are in place. Because if they are not in place, we know that chances of having the more of the same trends is more than likely to happen. So it's about changing the level of intervention and the style of intervention so that you focus on what matters, and then the rest will fall in line. As I say, that will also spill over to oversight in terms of the cooperative and link in terms of how should oversight then define the accounting and accountability format on the same very same issues. But not only do we deal with issues at a complex level, but we make sure that the basic, simple, logical issues are intact, because if they are intact, we know that the rest will fall in line. So the more we look at consistent and common issues that are simple and work, the more we can be more effective in the way we deal with the intervention. Now, at the moment, we have raised in this analysis that these issues will not be happening at these levels of proportions if the leadership was having its attention properly are given to them. That's why we're requesting that perhaps we should heighten that level of monitoring on these basic issues, because that's where the results are going to come from.
You also mentioned that 80% of government departments weren't paying their bills on time. Have they indicated why, and just what impact is this having?
Most issues would relate to, I would imagine, the administrative inefficiencies that would be associated with processing those transactions. And to that extent, it comes back to those daily disciplines that need to be put in place from the point of view of the accounting and finance portfolios. But also, on the other hand, one cannot rule out, speculative as this may be, the manner with which the relationship is established with the vendors as well. Because if the information is not provided in an appropriate manner, it will take more time to get to the bottom of approving a transaction. And here, even though there's a highlighting of the high level of delayed payment, we have said that we need to get oversight and leadership to investigate the underlying causes. We can only just assume at this stage that the causes could be both ways, one, administrative perhaps lapses, as well as to some extent the relationship arrangements with the vendors in terms of how they provide qualitative and convincing information that they should be paid on time. But it needs further investigation. The impact definitely, if you do look at one of the issues that we highlighted as the critical for reversing the effect of the financial crisis. Timely payment to vendors, particularly small businesses, was cited as one of the elements that will help the economic recovery speedily. And therefore, it's for that reason that this area cannot be left without any mention. But also on this point, it's encouraging that there are already signs that are leading to the interventions in this respect. If you look at the hotline that has been established by government to deal with these issues, where vendors can utilize that hotline for action to be taken, these are some of the actions that one would encourage, so that hopefully next year when you report on this one, the trend would have reduced significantly.
One final question. Thanks. In the absence of any questions, thanks for your time again. The AG will be available to do one-on-ones for the next 10 minutes or so. Thanks again.